A woman in her 20s stares pensively through striking brown eyes. Her hair is scraped up into a tight bun at the top of her head, with a few curls left hanging around her pale face. Sally Hawkins, Rupert Penry Jones. Persuasion by Jane Austen. The woman, Anne Elliot, turns away as footmen carry trays of drinks out through French doors and into a garden. She clutches a thick leather-bound inventory book as she enters a grand wood-paneled dining room. White dust sheets cover the furniture. She checks items off a list as she ascends an impressive staircase, where a servant swathes a chandelier with a dust cloth. Alice Crage, Julia Davis, Amanda Hale, Tobias Menzies, Peter White, Sam Hazeldine, Marion Bailey, Jennifer Higgum, and Anthony Head. Anne dips her pen in an inkwell held out by a servant standing on the landing. Anne takes a small glass from a tray held out by a footman. She holds it up and blows into it to remove any dust and replaces it on the tray. She hurries on down a darkened corridor. Flustered, Anne mumbles to herself as she enters a large room with stripped wooden flooring. She rushes to a nook and looks out through a latticed window. She sees four white steeds pulling a carriage into the drive. She turns, sighs apprehensively, and heads downstairs. Music, Martin Phipps. Screenplay, Simon Burke. Producer, David Snodden. Director, Adrian Shergold. Anne, wearing an embroidered red cape over a plain green dress, rushes back through the dining room and out to the front entrance. An elegant woman in her late 40s steps down from the carriage. They embrace.
Dear Anne, you look quite done for. I came back as soon as I received your letter. I had no idea the position was so ruinous.
Unfortunately, a person who's contracted debts must pay them, even if he is a gentleman.
Was there no possibility of retrenchment?
Unfortunately, Father and Elizabeth could find no means of lessening their expenses without compromising their dignity or relinquishing their comforts in a manner simply not to be borne. But I have at last persuaded Father to let out the house. And if I can ensure that we live within our means, somewhere less extravagant, then in only a few years we may be solvent again.
A few years?
In any event, it is better than selling. At least one day I may hope to return.
And where are you to go in the meantime? Is it decided?
All my hopes were for a small house nearby, but Father and Elizabeth are settled upon Bath.
They go to the garden.
Lady Russell.
Sir Walter Elliot and his daughter Elizabeth.
You've been in London, I hear.
Sir Walter, Elizabeth, may I say how truly sorry I am that you must leave Kellynch.
We are blameless, Lady Russell, quite blameless. Every sacrifice has been made, however painful.
We cut off all unnecessary charities at once, Lady Russell. And even refrained from new furnishing the drawing room, which, as you know, poor Mama left in his frightful state.
And still, it is a comfort to know we've done all we could.
Of course.
Ah, but here is Shepherd. He's promised us some news.
Is that his daughter with him?
Mrs. Clay's husband passed away not long ago. She has returned to her father's house. She is often with us recently.
White-haired Mr. Shepherd and Mrs. Clay join the group.
Lady Russell, Miss Anne, Sir Walter. I have this very morning received an approach for the lease of Kellynch that I am convinced must meet with your absolute approval. An admiral, sir, recently retired and a native of this county, desires to settle in this very part of the world.
An admiral?
I should have much preferred a gentleman. The Navy has its uses, no doubt, but I should be sorry to see any friend of mine belonging to it.
Indeed, Sir Walter.
Yes! It is in two points offensive to me. The first is being the means of raising persons of obscure birth into undue distinction. And second, you never see a naval man who is not most shockingly knocked about, exposed as they are to wind and weather till they're simply not fit to be seen.
Nevertheless, Sir Walter, The Admiral has a very substantial fortune, and I have no doubt of him being a most responsible tenant.
Oh.
And consider, Sir Walter, how he will look around and bless his good fortune to be in the home of a baronet of such a prominent and distinguished family.
Yes. Then, with your permission, sir, I shall open negotiations with Admiral Croft.
Croft?
Yes. Are you acquainted with the gentleman, Miss Anne?
Yes. No, that is to say, I'm familiar with his...
I'm not fond of the idea of my shrubberies being always approachable by the tenant.
If you'll excuse me, there's still much to do.
Anne walks off. She enters her room and places the heavy inventory book on her modest four-poster bed. Anne sits down, her back to the door. She is clearly flustered and breathes heavily. Lady Russell enters.
Good heavens, Anne. What is the matter with you?
Nothing. I assure you, I'm quite well.
Anne.
Lady Russell sits on the bed.
Who is Admiral Croft? And why does he cause you to be out of countenance, sir?
Anne keeps her back to her.
Anne.
Admiral Croft's wife is... is...
Mrs. Croft?
Indeed. And Mrs. Croft is the sister of Captain... Frederick Wentworth.
Wentworth? I see.
Oh, to think that soon he may be walking through this house.
Anne, you know that your father thought it a most unsuitable match. He would never have countenanced an alliance he deemed so degrading.
He was not alone, as I recall.
Lady Russell looks stung by Anne's comment.
To become engaged at 19, in the middle of a war, to a young naval officer who... had no fortune and no expectations, you would indeed have been throwing yourself away. And I should have been failing in my duty as your godmother if I did not counsel against it. You were young, and it was entirely prudent to break off the understanding.
Prudent it may have been, and yet Captain Wentworth has made his fortune in the war. And is now extremely wealthy.
Has he written to you?
No, never a word. I've only the newspapers from my authority.
Then, if his intentions toward you had been truly sincere, would he not have contacted you when his circumstances changed?
Anne shakes her head and fights tears.
I don't blame you. Nor myself, for having been led by you. But nevertheless, I think very differently now from what I was persuaded to think 8 years ago.
Oh, my dear Anne. You are a good and beautiful young woman. I promise you this. One day you will find someone to love you as you deserve.
I'm 27.
Later, the family are joined by Mr. Shepherd and Mrs. Clay for dinner in the dining room.
Forget, Shepherd. If you have no objection, I have a mind to engage your charming daughter as a companion to Elizabeth.
Oh, Sir Walter.
Well, I'm sure, sir, Penelope would be greatly honoured by such a distinction.
Then it is settled. She shall come with us to Bath tomorrow.
Is not Anne companion enough for Elizabeth?
Oh, but Anne is going to Uppercross. I received a letter only this morning from Sister Mary. She is indisposed again and requires Anne to come and look after her. And since nobody would want Anne in Bath, I wrote back straight away to say she should come as soon as she'd finished everything here.
Well. all your hopes were for a small house nearby.
Do send our regards to the Musgroves.
In her room, Anne turns a key in a small wooden box and opens the lid. She lifts a small wooden framed miniature portrait of a woman and looks fondly at it. She then lifts out a bundle of letters bound with a red ribbon. She blows dust off them. She gathers herself together, puts the letters back and shuts the lid. Next morning, carriages wait at the front of Kalinch. Household servants stand in a line paying respects to the family who exit the imposing grey stone building. Elizabeth stops and turns to Anne.
Before you go, Anne, on no account must you forget to visit each house in the parish to take our leave. It is expected.
Anne watches as Elizabeth and Sir Walter climb on board the carriage. Later, Anne writes in her diary.
Is he married? I do not know that he is. And yet, so eligible a gentleman would surely by now have formed an attachment. Will he bring his wife here? And his children? I only pray that I am spared any meeting. I know my chance of happiness has passed forever. But to be reminded of it by his presence here would, I am certain, be more than my spirits could bear.
A carriage arrives as Anne's carriage leaves.
Lady, Mr. Shepherd. Oh, that is Miss Anne Elliot, Admiral. Sir Walter's middle daughter. The only one with any sense.
A pity then that we did not make her acquaintance.
She has been half a mile away at Uppercross with her sister.
Oh, well then we certainly shall make her acquaintance. Is she married, Mr. Shepherd?
Sadly, no, ma'am. Nor I think at her age is likely to be.
The middle-aged burly Admiral and his elegant wife saunter through the dining room.
It is certainly roomier than a frigate.
Anne arrives at Uppercross Cottage. It's a grey stone, well-proportioned country house. A maid in white uniform rushes to meet her. At Kalinch, the Admiral and his wife enter a room with four freestanding mirrors draped with dust cloths facing each other.
Such a number of looking glasses. There's no getting away from oneself.
I think this room will do very well for Frederick.
Let us see if he comes. Your brother seems dead set against the whole idea of Kellynch.
I fear Somerset has unpleasant memories for him. There was once talk of an engagement to a girl in the county.
There was?
8 years ago or so. We were in the East Indies at the time. He's never spoken of it, but his heart was quite broken, I believe.
Oh, well, well. Frederick engaged. Who would have thought it?
Indeed. I sometimes wonder if he will ever settle down.
Anne enters Uppercross Cottage and finds her sister Mary laid out on the sofa in front of the fire. There's a table of tea things beside her.
So, you are come at last. I began to think I should never see you. I am so ill. I can hardly speak. In fact, I do not think I was ever so ill in my life as I have been all this morning. I'm fit to be left alone, I'm sure.
Is Charles not here?
Charles will go out shooting, even though I told him I was ill. And I have not seen a soul this whole long morning. Not one of the Musgroves has seen fit to come and see me, even though Charles told them I was ill. It did not suit, I suppose.
Oh, you will see them yet, I'm sure. It is still early. Or perhaps if you feel well enough to attempt the short walk to the great house, we could call upon them.
We ought to wait till they call upon you. They should know what is due to you as my sister.
I assure you I have not the smallest objection on that account.
Perhaps a little air would do me good. But I really must eat something first. I'm quite starved.
Anne stands and rushes to a window.
Good heavens, how the girls are grown up.
The Miss Musgroves have returned from their school in Exeter with all the usual accomplishments, and, of course, could now think of nothing but being fashionable and merry.
Dear Henrietta, Louisa!
Oh, Anne! Here you are. Come, Mama, I can't wait to see you.
And we have such exciting news.
The two pretty girls, Henrietta and Louisa, run past and across a well-manicured lawn. The Elliot sisters follow at a gentler pace. Anne and Mary arrive at Uppercross Great House. Mrs. Musgrove, a kind-faced woman, and the girls greet them.
Welcome to Uppercross, Miss Anne. How pale and drawn you are.
We must fatten you up while you're here.
I myself have been very unwell.
And Sir Walter and Miss Elizabeth. Oh, how they shall miss you.
In any event, I'm very happy to be here, not in Bath.
Oh, Mama, I hope we shall be in Bath this winter.
But remember, if we do go, we must be in a good situation.
Oh, yes. None of your queen squares for us.
And how are you?
Very well. Thank you, Charles.
Charles Musgrove leans down to his wife, Mary.
I am glad to see you recovered, my dear.
Did you ask your father? Did you, Charles?
Father has many other uses for his money and a right to spend it as he likes.
Charles, it is left to you, we shall soon be destitute.
Admiral Croft and his wife to take possession directly. And I believe we've been very fortunate with our tenants.
Yet it must be very hard for you, my dear, to give up your home so.
Of course, when your poor dear mama was alive, there was moderation and economy at Kellynch.
But there were never balls. And the Crofts are sure to have balls and invite the most eligible young naval officers.
Indeed, this is our exciting news. I quite forgot. Mrs. Croft, it appears, has a brother, Captain Wentworth. And he is just returned to England and is coming to stay with them at Kellynch.
It is true. The Pools chanced to make their acquaintance in Taunton this week. It is said Captain Wentworth is the most handsomest man in the Navy and quite unattached.
And such a wealth of Spanish gold.
Indeed.
How fortunate he is.
Well, we shall all see for ourselves when he comes to dine tomorrow night.
Tomorrow?
I have just now received this note from Admiral Croft, accepting my invitation.
The next night, Anne is in her bedroom. She holds an olive-green velvet gown up to her front and looks in a mirror. Mary, holding a candlestick, stomps upstairs.
We must not keep the Crofts and Captain Wentworth waiting.
Wearing simple white cotton undergarments, Anne picks up another dress and holds it up to herself. She rushes to a window and looks out. Mr. Musgrove is carrying one of Mary's sons in his arms. Anne dons a robe and heads downstairs.
He fell from a tree in the garden.
She meets Mr. Musgrove on his way up, carrying the little boy. Anne leads him into her bedroom where he lays the boy on her bed. Mary and Charles enter.
Sent for the apothecary. He will be here directly.
His collarbone is dislocated.
Mary retches.
Mary, we should be all right.
Anne takes a firm grip of the boy's shoulder. Mr. Musgrove joins Charles and Mary outside the room.
And with a little rest, he'll be right as rain in no time.
Oh, thank God.
And never fear, Charles, I shall give your excuses to the Crofts.
Excuses?
Indeed, with the child going on so well now, it would be a shame to spoil the dinner. I am really most anxious to meet our new neighbours. Indeed, it is more a duty than anything else. If Anne will stay with you, my love, I have no scruple at all.
Of course. And so we are to be left to shift for ourselves. We're with
a sick child while you go to dinner with the Crofts.
I need not stay too late, dearest.
Just because I am the poor mother, I am not allowed to stir. No, no, going on so well. He says, how does he know he is going on so well when I may be
Please. You may all leave the little Charles to my care.
Well, this is very kind of you, Anna. Are you sure?
In any case, I have no appetite.
Well, then, it is settled.
Anne smiles and nods politely to Mr. Musgrove, who goes, with Mary and Charles in tow. She contemplates for a moment, then looks up. Later that night, Anne walks through the garden and holds up a lantern. She stops and looks towards the great house. She turns and walks back. Next morning, Anne is downstairs looking out through a window. She's startled when Henrietta and Louisa come in.
Oh, Anne, you missed the most delightful party last night.
I cannot tell you how handsome is Captain Wentworth.
He is so much more handsome and agreeable than anyone I have ever met before.
Such manners, such conversation.
Such capital.
Oh, and we have all been invited to Kellynch tomorrow night for dinner.
Even you, Anne.
Damn it, Mary, I'm late. Is he here?
Oh, Captain Wentworth, do come in.
Forgive me, Anne. The door was open. I trust the boy does well.
Oh, yes.
Much better, thank you, Wentworth.
Mary notices Wentworth eyeing Anne.
Wentworth, this is my elder sister, Anne.
Anne turns and faces him. He bows and she curtsies.
Really? But Anne has never said a word about it.
It was a long time ago. You were at school.
Come, Wentworth. Well, the birds will all have gone south for the winter.
Of course. Ladies.
Oh, come, Henrietta. Let us go with them. Oh, where were
we? Anne fixes her gaze down and seems rooted to the spot. Anne writes in her diary.
I have seen him. We have been once more in the same room.
A tear falls on the page.
A curtsy. I heard his voice. And then he was gone. He has not forgiven me. I have used him ill, deserted and disappointed him. And worse, shown a feebleness of character in doing so, which his own decided, confident temper could not endure. Once there were no two hearts so open, no feelings so in harmony. But now we are strangers. Worse than strangers. For we may never become acquainted. It is a perpetual estrangement. And tonight, I am to be tested once more.
Mrs. Croft greets Anne in the Kellynch dining room. Wentworth stares at her.
There you are. Let me introduce you to Miss Anne Elliot. Miss Elliot, my brother, Captain Frederick Wentworth.
A bow and a curtsy, respectively.
Captain Wentworth and I met briefly yesterday.
Oh, Frederick, you might have told me.
This must be very bad for you, Miss Elliot, to come to your home and find us here.
No, not at all, Admiral. I'm happy to know that the house is in such worthy and careful hands.
Tall, blonde, handsome Wentworth watches as Admiral Croft leads Anne away. Later, everyone eats.
And what news, Frederick, of dear Captain Harville?
He's settled for now at Lyme with our good friend James Bennick, who's awaiting a new command.
How exciting.
Of course. I remember Captain Bennick. He's engaged to Harville's sister.
I'm sorry to have to tell you that she died last summer while Bennick was out of the Cape.
Oh, no. How dreadful.
Yes. 5 years they waited for a fortune to satisfy her family. Now he has it, of course, but too late. Much too late. But then I've never thought that a man on active service should even contemplate marriage.
Have you indeed?
A frigate at wartime is no place for a woman, and the long separations are a sore trial to both parties.
Oh, how true.
There is nothing so bad as a separation.
As I know to my cost, for Mr. Musgrove always attends the assizes, and I'm so glad when he's safe home again.
But now I'm paid off and assure Sophie you'll be delighted to hear that I am at last resolved to settle down.
Indeed, Frederick, I am delighted to hear it. Pray, do you have anyone in mind?
No, I'm quite ready to make a foolish match with any woman between 15 and 30. A little beauty, a few smiles, and a compliment to the Navy, and I shall be lost.
Oh, come, Frederick.
After all, what right is a humble sailor to expect any better?
Wentworth and Anne make eye contact briefly.
I am to speak in earnest. What I desire above all in a wife is firmness of character. A woman who knows her own mind. I cannot abide timidity or feebleness of purpose. A weak spirit which is always open to persuasion, first one way and then the other, can never be relied upon.
Well, we must see what we can do.
Anne plays the piano in the drawing room. There's a figure standing watching her from near the doorway. It's Wentworth. He eyeballs her fixedly and seems to be staring right into her soul. Anne continues playing, seemingly oblivious to his presence. She looks up from her manuscript to the doorway, but there's nobody there. Anne continues playing. Louisa and Henrietta bounce in.
Oh, Anne, play us something to dance to.
Oh, yes, Anne, will you? Something jolly.
Oh, yes.
Later, Anne plays for the others as they dance around the grand, well-appointed drawing room. Wentworth partners up with Henrietta while Mary and Charles dance together. Louisa dances in a circle with Mr. Musgrove and the Crofts. They break off and everyone forms two lines. Wentworth and Henrietta and the Crofts jig together up the centre of the two lines, turn and come back again. Anne watches from the corner of her eye as Wentworth smiles merrily at the elfin-featured Henrietta. Daytime, Charles fires his rifle to the sky.
I've never seen a pleasanter man in all my life than Captain Wentworth.
He was not very gallant by Anne, though, was he? When Louisa asked him what he thought of you the other night, he said, "You were so altered, he should not have known you again."
I would not swear he used exactly those words.
Although he was most attentive to me.
It must be said he would make a capital match for Louisa.
Louisa! Stuff and nonsense, Charles. It is clear he is all for Henrietta.
But, my love, surely you cannot have forgotten that Henrietta has an understanding with my cousin Charles Hayter.
Indeed, I have not. But I cannot say the same of Henrietta.
Quite right, too. Who, pray, is Charles Hayter?
Nothing but a country curate. This degrading alliance for a connection of the Elliots.
Now, there, you talk nonsense, my dear. He will inherit the estate at Winthrop and the farm near Taunton, and he is a very amiable young man.
Well, I do not think a young woman has the right to marry anyone, however amiable, if he is disagreeable or inconvenient to her family.
No, what stuff! If Henrietta has Charles Hayter and Louisa can get Captain Wentworth, I shall be very well satisfied. But what do you say, Anne? Does the captain prefer Louisa or Henrietta? Wentworth!
We're just going over to Winthrop to visit Cousin Charles, Henrietta's intended. Why don't you come with us, Anne? I'm sure the haters would love to see you again.
Capital idea, Louisa. We shall all go. I know Mary's in a fine sweat to see Cousin Charles again.
Anne follows reluctantly as the party head off up a woodland path. Henrietta climbs over a stile unaided and walks on alone. Wentworth follows, then Louisa, who calls out and suddenly jumps into Wentworth's arms. Clearly wounded, Anne watches as he spins her around and sets her down on her feet again. Slim blonde Louisa follows Wentworth across a fallen tree trunk laid over a stream as a bridge. He offers her hand to Louisa and helps her onto dry land again. Charles helps Henrietta across, then reaches out for Mary, who takes his hand, and they all reach the other side safely. Anne is left to cross the uneven trunk all by herself. She negotiates her way over a branch stump and looks up at the rest of the party, who have gone on without her. She slips and falls onto the grassy bank. In a daze, she sees Wentworth helping her up.
Thank you, God. Well, it is really nothing.
Charles offers his arm as Wentworth walks off.
You better stay here and rest a little while.
Then I shall remain with you.
No, please, I take to inconvenience here, and I know my way to Winthrop perfectly well. I should catch up with you directly. Please, Charles.
Very well, if you insist.
Charles picks a bonnet up off the ground and hands it to Anne, who stays seated on the tree trunk. He goes. The rest of the party reach the edge of the forest and walk out into a wide open meadow.
Ah, see? There is Winthrop.
Mary staggers out of the woods and up to Wentworth and Louisa, who stare at the house which peeps out over trees up ahead.
You'll better go on without me. I am really excessively tired.
It would be very rude of us to come all this way and not call on our cousins.
I will stay with Mary, Charles. If you and Henrietta want to go on and pay our respects to the Haters. And I am sure Captain Wentworth will offer us his protection.
Very well. Henrietta.
Henrietta and Charles head off together.
It's unpleasant having such connections, Captain Wentworth. But I assure you, I have never been in that house above twice in my life.
Mary shifts about awkwardly, looking at the pair.
I wonder where Anne has got to.
She walks off, leaving them alone together. They stroll.
Mary is good-natured enough in many respects. She does sometimes provoke me excessively by her nonsense. She has a great deal too much of the Elliot pride. You know, we all wish Charles had married Anne instead.
Anne?
Oh, yes. Did you not know he wanted to marry Anne?
No, I did not. Do you mean to say she refused him?
Oh, yes. Certainly.
When did this happen?
I do not exactly know. But before he married Mary.
Wentworth looks away pensively.
Did she say why she would not marry?
Well, Papa always said it was her great friend Lady Russell's doing. He thought Charles might not be bookish enough to please Lady Russell, and so she persuaded Anne to refuse him. I myself would have no idea of being so easily persuaded. When I have made up my mind, I have made it. And I'm quite determined.
Yours is a character I see of decision and firmness. And I honor it.
Oh, look! They have brought Charles Hayter with them. Come.
Anne has been watching and listening to them from nearby in the woods. Anne appears in the meadow as the others walk on. She hesitates a moment, then glumly plods on towards Winthrop. The bottom of her skirt is wet and dirty from her fall and the walk. On a country lane, the Crofts' gig approaches.
Ah, there you are. We thought we might cross your wake as we drove out this way.
Admiral Croft, Mrs. Croft. We've just paid a visit to my cousin, Charles Hayter.
Oh.
Miss Elliot, you must be tired. Do let us have the pleasure of taking you home to Uppercross.
Oh, no, thank you. No, it is too much trouble.
No. No, we are returning in any case by that road, and there's plenty of room.
Really? You're too kind.
Stuff, Miss Elliot. You must come with us. Indeed, you must.
Oh.
Wentworth lifts her up onto the rear seat.
Thank you.
Wentworth offers his arm to Louisa, and they walk off in the opposite direction. On the gig...
I wish Frederick would spread a little more canvas and bring home one of those two young ladies to Kellynch. He means to have one of them. There's just no saying which one.
They are both very good-natured, unaffected girls, indeed.
A very respectable family. What do you think, Miss Elliot? It won't be long, if I'm any judge.
Anne stares about blankly as the gig rattles onwards. She seems completely stuck for words. Anne, wearing a simple white cotton nightdress, writes in her diary beside a roaring log fire.
Now I understand him. He can never forgive me. He condemns me still for the past and is becoming now quite attached to another. And yet...
Anne, we are to go to Lyme tomorrow morning. Captain Wentworth must visit his best friend, Captain... something or other. And has invited us all to make the trip with him, ain't it, Prime?
No, indeed. I am sure I'd better stay here with the children.
Am I to go without you? In my delicate stage of recovery? Suppose I were to be seized of a sudden in some dreadful way and not able to ring the bell for servants?
Anne turns to Mary and smiles a reluctant assent.
Quite attached to another. And yet, still he cannot be unfeeling. He cannot see me suffer without wishing to give relief. It is further proof of his own good, warm and amiable heart, which I cannot contemplate without infinite pain and regret.
Mary, Anne, Henrietta and Louisa sit in a closed carriage pulled along by two white steeds. Wentworth rides alongside on a black horse as they travel over a lush green pasture surrounded by rolling hills. Wentworth picks up the pace and gallops ahead. They reach Dorset Coast and the girls run onto Lyme Beach, where a blustering wind sends white foamy waves crashing onto the shore. Mary and Charles walk arm in arm. Mary stoops to pick up a shell before walking on with Charles. Anne, wearing her red cape, and Wentworth stand beside each other, watching the others from a distance. They share a brief, awkward look. Wentworth turns, smiles, and runs off. Anne watches as he warmly embraces his two male companions a little way off down the shingle. Anne and the others approach the men. Wentworth does the introductions.
Captain Harry Harville, Captain James Bennick, Mr. and Mrs. Charles Musgrove, Miss Henrietta Musgrove, Miss Louisa Musgrove, and Miss Elliot.
Miss Anne Elliot?
Yes.
Captain.
At a coaching inn.
Of course, the Admiralty amuse themselves every now and then by sending a few hundred men to sea in a ship not fit to be...
Anne sits at the end of the dining table.
May I say how sorry I was to hear of your terrible loss?
Thank you. There never was a love like ours. And never will be again.
And among the thousands that may just as well go to the bottom as not, it is impossible for them to distinguish which may be least missed.
Wentworth entertains from the other end of the table.
And yet, Captain... You are still young, and I pray you may one day rally and be happy with another.
Man does not forget a woman as readily as you forget us.
I will not allow a woman's nature to be more inconstant than a man's.
And yet you will allow that poetry and novels are against you. They tell us endlessly of the fickleness of women.
And are they not all written by men?
Yes, Miss Ellion. Perhaps they are. I see we shall not readily agree on this.
I would never suppose that true constancy is known only by women.
but the one claim I shall make for my own sex is that we love longest when all hope is gone.
Anne eyes Wentworth, laughing with the others. Louisa holds up her goblet.
The Navy!
The Navy!
The Navy!
The Navy.
Daytime on Lime Cobb. Anne strolls with Harville, who uses a walking cane.
Indeed. Sitting up so with Paul Bennick last night. Not known him talk so much. Not in a long time.
In time, we found a common interest. In poetry.
He reads nothing else. Day in, day out. Never happier he is than when reading impassioned descriptions of hopeless agony or sundered hearts destroyed by wretchedness.
Yes. And did venture to recommend a larger allowance of prose in his daily study.
The pair turn to see Captain Benwick staring moodily out at the rough sea.
It's bad for him. I know. He's shut up as he is. But what can we do?
Well, he's young. And time is a great healer. Or so at least I'm told.
A slim man walks along the top of the stonewall cob, his black coat billowing in the wind. He holds on tightly to his top hat as waves crashing onto the pier send up white spray. The others stroll casually along the cob's lower level. They approach a set of stone steps. The group begin to climb the steps. Anne lingers behind a moment and glances contentedly out at the sea. She quickly turns her head to Wentworth, who's been standing watching her. He turns away as if pretending not to see her. Anne, holding onto her bonnet, follows the others and climbs the steps. The slim gentleman stands at the top. He tips his hat as Anne passes. Wentworth looks back at the young man as he follows Anne and the others along the top level of the cob. The man stares at the group before descending the stone steps. In her room at the coaching inn, Anne looks at her face in a mirror. She then turns away and seems completely lost in thought. She walks out onto the landing and descends the first flight of stairs. She's startled on meeting the slim man who was walking on the cob.
Forgive me.
Not still.
He steps aside and lets her descend the second flight of stairs. The man, who's in his 20s, watches her eagerly as she goes and then follows her down. The slim man boards a carriage waiting outside as Anne and the others congregate in the breakfast room.
Who is that gentleman?
The innkeeper peers out through the window.
William Elliot, sir. Came in last night on his way to Bath for the winter.
William Elliot? Bless me, Anne. It must be our cousin. William, it must, indeed.
He is handsome.
He's not.
Did he mention a connection to the Elliots of Kellynch at all?
He certainly said he would one day be a baronet.
There. It is him. It is.
He seems of particular interest, this cousin.
Sir Walter has no sons, so his title and the estate at Kellynch will pass to the cousin.
What a pity we should not have been introduced to each other.
His father and Mr. Elliot have not been on speaking terms since his unfortunate marriage. An introduction could hardly have been welcome.
They'll hardly be able to avoid seeing each other in Bath.
You'll be sure to mention our seeing him next time you write to Father.
On the contrary.
Do you think he had the Elliot countenance?
The party are on another walk on the cob. A misty rain has left the grey stone slabs wet and dark. Wentworth walks arm in arm with Louisa as they approach the steps to descend to the lower level.
Captain Wentworth!
Louisa!
Catch me!
She jumps and descends the steps again.
Louisa, no! Louisa, no!
Louisa! No!
She jumps from a height and falls.
A surgeon, quickly!
Of course.
Captain Bennett. Captain Bennett knows where one can be found. Send him to the inn. Keep this press firmly against the wound.
Wentworth removes his white necktie and hands it to Anne, who removes Louise's bonnet and places the white cloth at the back of Louise's head. The young girl lies unconscious, a bloody stain left on the inside of her straw bonnet. Back at the coachman's inn, Anne tends to Louisa, who lies in bed. Wentworth enters.
Charles. It appears she'll be here sometime. Her parents should be told.
I would rather not leave her, not tonight.
Then let me go. And if you wish, I'll take Henrietta and Mary with me.
And not Anne?
If Anne will stay, there is no one so proper, so capable. Louisa needs no other.
But Anne is to stay, who is nothing to Louisa, while I am sent packing.
Oh, my dear, I'm sure I can't do
that. Am I not as capable as Anne?
Of course.
Am I not as proper? And to be sent home without Charles, too, without my husband in my condition, no. No, it is too unkind.
I will go with Henrietta.
Wentworth watches Anne keenly as she gets up from Louisa's bedside. It's dark outside as Wentworth leads Henrietta out to the carriage. He assists her on board and turns to Anne. He hesitates, then holds out his hand for her. She takes it and climbs on board. He gets in with them. Pale moonlight shines as the two white steeds leading the carriage gallop along a country lane. Inside the carriage, Henrietta lies asleep on Wentworth's shoulder. He fixes his gaze resolutely out through the window. Anne sits meekly opposite him. They arrive at the front of Upper Cross Great House. Wentworth jumps out of the carriage and swiftly opens the large iron gate.
What?
Anne, with Henrietta on her arm, ascends the steps to Wentworth, who waits for them. They walk up the path. Wentworth stops.
Miss Elliot, I've been thinking whether you had not better remain with Henrietta while I go in and break it to the Musgroves alone. Do you think this is a good plan?
I do.
The ladies wait as Wentworth walks up the path to the grand arched front door and watches and smiles slightly.
See Mr. Musgrove without delay. Tell him Captain Frederick Wentworth is here and must speak with him directly.
Anne and Henrietta tentatively approach the doorway. Henrietta walks inside and passes Wentworth on his way out.
It is done. I shall return now to Larne, see if I can be of any assistance. I believe the Musgroves will soon follow.
Thank you. Captain, I'm most anxious. If you'd be so kind as to have word sent to me in Bath as to how Louisa does.
In Bath?
I am not needed in Lyme or any longer at Uppercross. I must rejoin my father. Our house is in Camden Place.
You dislike Bath most heartily, as I recall.
I do. But I have an old school friend who lives there, and I had the consolation also of Lady Russell's company.
Very well, then. Goodbye, Miss Elliot.
Wentworth dons his top hat and mounts his horse. Anne stands open-mouthed, as if wanting to say something. He gallops off down the drive. Anne purses her lips and stands watching him disappear into the black night. She turns and once more walks onto the path leading to the great house. She shuts the heavy iron gate. Bath, a carriage drives in front of the regal stone houses of Royal Crescent. Anne peers out through the window of the carriage at the impressive surroundings. Later in the house, maidservants carry her cases upstairs as Anne waits outside the drawing room. Inside are Sir Walter, Mrs. Clay, and Elizabeth.
I cannot suppose myself at all wanted.
Oh, nonsense, Penelope. She is nothing to me, indeed, compared to you.
My dear madam, you must not run away from us now. It must not be.
Please, Penelope.
Ah, Anne. There you are.
The ladies curtsy.
How are you, Anne? Are we greatly missed at Kellynch? But let me assure you, Bath has more than answered our expectations in every respect.
Indeed, our house is undoubtedly the finest in Camden Place.
Oh, yes. You can be sure that the acquaintance of the Elliots is most exceedingly sought of. Mm.
And best of all, Miss Anne, your cousin, Mr. Elliot, is here in Bath and is quite reconciled with Sir Walter.
Mr. Elliot?
Indeed, has called repeatedly, has dined with us once, evidently delighted at the distinction of being asked. And clearly places his whole happiness in being on intimate terms in Camden Place.
He has offered his most handsome apologies for any former appearance of neglect in his duties towards us.
And Mrs. Elliot?
Dead. Quite dead.
Certainly, his wife was a nobody. Well, beauty and rich. But we must make allowances. He was young and foolish.
Not anymore. Such elegant manners.
So gentlemanly and fashionable.
Indeed, I have no objection to being seen with him anywhere. Ah, that will be Lady Russell, no doubt.
No, that is Mr. Elliot's knock. I am sure of it.
I believe you are right. The poor man simply cannot keep away from you, Miss Elliot.
Upon my word, Penelope, I am scarcely aware of his intentions being beyond those of other men.
Elegantly dressed, Elizabeth sits up and smiles.
How is Mary looking? Last time I saw her, she had a red nose.
Oh, she is quite well. Thank you, Father.
Mr. Elliot enters the neatly bedecked drawing room, cocks his head proudly, then bows.
My apologies for calling so unexpectedly, but I could not rest without knowing that Miss Elliot had not taken cold yesterday.
Oh, how exceedingly kind of you, Mr. Elliot.
He catches sight of Anne.
My dear sir, give me leave to present my daughter, Anne.
Anne, wearing a plain skirt and jacket, curtsies.
This is extraordinary. Our paths have crossed before, Sir Walter, at Lyme, not a week past. Not that I could expect Miss Elliot to remember.
Indeed, I do remember, Mr. Elliot, very clearly.
How extraordinary that we should be guests at the same inn at the same time.
Yes. It is.
One might almost say providential.
Anne smiles, a bit flustered. On Lime Hills, Louisa Benwick, Mary, Charles Wentworth and Harville are walking up a hilltop.
I cannot tell you how relieved I am to see her recovering, sir. Yes, she will make an excellent wife, Frederick. I congratulate you.
I beg your pardon?
Come, sir, you're mistaken if you think you've kept your intentions towards Louisa Musgrove a secret.
Wentworth eyes Harville curiously.
Consider an understanding exists between myself and Miss Musgrove.
Of course, do you deny it?
I do. That is what you say. Astonishes me.
Do you mean to tell me you don't care for her at all?
Well, no, not in that way. No, most assuredly.
Well, then I fear you'll gravely disappoint both her and her family. They talk of little else.
Wentworth walks on, wearing a heavy frown.
Dear God, Harry, have I been so unguarded, so thoughtless?
It would appear that you have.
Well, if what you say is true, then I must, in all honor, regard myself as bound to her.
Indeed, Frederick. I am afraid you seem to have entangled yourself.
This is dreadful. What can I do?
Perhaps you might take your leave of Lyme on some pretext and await Louise's recovery elsewhere. It is perhaps possible a prolonged absence may weaken the bonds between you.
I have been meaning to visit my brother in Shropshire.
Capital.
Wentworth walks on ahead. He rubs his forehead and seems totally appalled by the revelation. A carriage travels through the streets of Bath. Inside, Lady Russell sits opposite Anne.
Captain Wentworth and Louisa Musgrove.
It's quite true, I assure you. Any day now, I expect to hear news of the engagement.
And you, child? Are you reconciled to it?
Oh, yes, indeed. I wish them every happiness.
Of course.
The grand, high-ceilinged pump room. A crystal chandelier hangs over the people who are gently circulating around the room. In the background, Elliot and his companions watch Anne and Lady Russell enter.
There's our Mr. Elliot, with the Wallaces.
I must admit, he does have a very pleasant manner.
Indeed he does. And yet...
And yet...
I cannot help feeling that there must be something more than immediately appears in this sudden interest in our family after so many years.
You refer to Elizabeth, I take it?
She is very handsome.
Well, he has nothing to gain from a reconciliation. His late wife, however unsuitable a match, was exceedingly wealthy, and in any case, nothing can prevent him from inheriting Kellynch and the baronetcy along with it.
Nothing except... my father marrying again and providing himself at last with a male heir.
Ah, no indeed. And Mrs. Clay is young and altogether well-looking. I wonder at Elizabeth, to place such a woman under your father's nose, so we must be vigilant.
Ah, Lady Russell.
Ah, Lady Cavendish.
Anne continues walking as Lady Russell joins her company. She meets Elliot, who doffs his hat.
My dearest cousin, once again, Providence seems eager to throw us together.
Good morning, Mr. Elliot.
I confess, I called only an hour ago at Camden Place and was most distressed to find you absent.
My father was quite taken up with some sensational news in this morning's paper.
You refer, of course, to your cousins, the Dowager Viscountess Dalrymple and her daughter, the Honourable Miss Carteret, who arrive in Bath today.
You are very well informed, Mr. Elliot.
Your father may have mentioned something on the subject.
I do not doubt that he did.
You do not seem anxious to make their acquaintance again. I agree. The Dalrymples are nothing in themselves, but... family connections are always worth preserving, and they are regarded everywhere as good company.
My idea of good company, Mr. Elliot, is the company of clever, well-informed people who have a great deal of conversation.
You are mistaken. That is not good company. That is the best. No, good company requires only birth, manners, and education, and with regard to education, I'm afraid it is not very particular. Ah, my cousin Anne shakes her head. She's not satisfied. In one point, however, I am sure we must feel alike. We welcome any addition to your father's society which diverts his thoughts from those who, well, are beneath him.
You refer to Mrs. Clay?
It is possible that I do.
My concern is that my father may be rendered unhappy by the connection. But perhaps I'm too fastidious.
My dear Anne, you have a better right to be fastidious than any woman I've ever met.
He removes his hat, takes her hand and kisses it passionately. Elizabeth gawps, open-mouthed at the pair. Later at home, Elizabeth comes downstairs.
Oh! Oh, good heavens. Mr. Elliot not with you? There is a letter come for you from Uppercross. If you are quick, you may just have time to read it before he calls again.
She sweeps past Anne, who then picks up the letter, which is placed on a silver tray on a hall table. She opens it eagerly.
My dear Anne, I rejoice to tell you that Louisa improves daily and will soon be quite her old self. I am also told we shall soon hear wedding bells at Uppercross, although I am sworn to secrecy on the subject and may say no more. But Mama says the local dressmakers will not answer for such an occasion. So expect to see us at Bath next week for a fitting. Until then, I remain your affectionate brother-in-law, Charles Musgrove.
Anne is sitting in front of the fire in her room, crying uncontrollably. Holding her hand to her mouth, tears stream down her pale face as she tries to suppress her heartbroken sobs. She wipes her face and struggles to gather herself together. She blows a candle out.
Anne! Anne! Anne!
Anne leaves her room and dons a bonnet, straightens her dress and heads downstairs. Sir Walter, Elizabeth and Mrs. Clay are waiting impatiently in the hallway for her.
Come, come, Anne, we must not be late. You cannot have forgotten we have an invitation from Lady Dalrymple.
I regret I am already engaged to spend the evening with an old school friend.
Not that sickly old widow in Westgate Buildings.
Mrs. Smith? Yes.
Smith? Westgate Buildings?
Excuse me.
And who, pray, is Mrs. Smith? One of the 5,000 Smiths that are everywhere to be met with? Upon my word, Miss Anne Elliot, you have the most extraordinary taste. To place such a person ahead of your own family connections among the nobility of England and Ireland. Mrs. Smith.
Perhaps she's not the only poor widow in Bath with little to live on and no surname of dignity. Good evening.
Sir Walter glares at her, astonished, as she walks out. Night. At the Westgate Buildings, Anne is being shown up a staircase by a middle-aged woman. They enter a modest drawing room where a kind-faced lady sits in front of a fire.
Harriet. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Much better. This is my nurse, Mrs. Rook.
How do you do, Miss Elliot?
Mrs. Rook,
I am truly sorry I've been unable to visit before this. My time has not been my own.
Oh, but we are deeply honoured to have a cousin of Lady Dalrymple pay us a visit here this evening, instead of calling upon her relations with the rest of her family. Oh. You will soon learn that absolutely nothing happens in Bath without Nurse Rook hearing of it. Come, dearest Anne. Tell me everything that has happened to you in the past 12 years.
Harry!
Wentworth approaches Harville on Lyme Cobb. The sea crashes high waves over the stone wall.
Harry! Harry!
Frederick!
I called at the inn, but Louise has gone back home to Uppercross, I find.
A week ago at least. Fennec took her. She's quite recovered. And how is your brother? He thinks I'm as big a fool as I do. You have no idea, Harry, how I curse the folly of my own pride. Had I only the good sense to seize my happiness when I had the chance again, and none of this would have happened.
I'm not sure I thought.
I imagined myself indifferent to her. When I was only
angry and resentful. Too late. Too late, I began to understand myself and her. Never, never have I met her equal in good sense or sweetness of character. She's perfection itself. I've never loved any but her.
We are talking now of Anne Elliot.
Of course, who else?
And I take it you have not received Bennett's letter.
I shall have to go to Uppercross now. It cannot in all decency be avoided.
I mention this letter only because it contains the news that he has proposed to Louisa Musgrove. She has accepted him. Now to be married directly.
Married? Louisa and Bennett?
Directly.
Well, I'm free.
As it happens, I'm going to Bath tomorrow. Perhaps now you'd care to join me.
Wentworth hugs his friend, Anne and Lady Russell, in a park.
I chanced to meet at the pump rooms again yesterday, but Mr. Elliot, without being indiscreet, I can reveal that you were very much talked of. He thinks you a most extraordinary young woman. In your temper, manners, mind, a model of female excellence. Now, I am no matchmaker, as you well know, but a most suitable connection. Everybody must certainly consider it. And I do think there would be every possibility of your and Mr. Elliot being very happy together. And I must confess, to look forward and think of you occupying your dear mother's place as the future mistress of Kellynch, the future Lady Elliot. Oh, my dearest Anne, it would give me more delight than is often felt at my time of life.
Sir Walter and Mrs. Clay. Curtsies and bows. Later in her room, Anne writes in her diary.
I cannot deny the idea of being restored to Kellynch, of calling it home again, my home forever, has a charm I cannot immediately resist. And Mr. Elliot is an exceedingly agreeable man, and in many respects, I think very highly of him.
Anne dips her pen in the inkwell, but it is run dry. She goes downstairs to investigate the voices.
Admiral! Mrs. Croft! I'm delighted to see you. What brings you here to Bath?
I'm afraid, Miss Elliot, it is my digestion.
And when your sister Mary learned we were to come to Bath, she charged us with this letter for you.
Thank you. And we'll stay for tea. Oh. And tell me the news from Kellynch.
Well, all the talk, of course, has been of the marriage.
The marriage?
Why, your cousin, of course. Miss Louisa Musgrove. Do you mean to tell me you did not know?
No, indeed. I only had a note from Charles that we were to soon expect a wedding.
Oh. Well, then I'm sure the letter we have brought from your sister will contain a full account.
I'm very happy for Louisa. I'm certain she has chosen wisely.
Indeed, indeed.
Oh, he's a fine fellow, right enough.
Whatever Frederick may say, she has no fears of being a naval captain's wife.
No, indeed. I must confess, the news did come as something of a surprise to us. Even Sophie was taken aback.
Really? Did he give you no indication of his intentions, sir?
No, no, never a word on the subject.
But Frederick is not a man to pine or complain. No, he very honourably hopes you were very happy with Bennett, and there's an end to it.
In fact, from his manner of speaking on the subject, one would never guess Frederick had ever thought of Louisa Musgrove for himself.
Bennett.
I beg your pardon?
Am I then to understand that Louisa is to marry Captain Bennett? Not Captain Wentworth.
Yes. Yes, that's it exactly. Poor Frederick. Now we will have to begin all over with somebody else.
Miss Anne, is something wrong?
No. No, you astonish me indeed.
You mean you did not know?
Well, the thing is certainly true. We have it from Frederick himself.
Captain Wentworth is in Bath.
He arrived last night.
Oh.
A busy shopping street in Bath. Wentworth cuts a handsome figure as he strolls past stalls selling goods such as birdcages, meat, household furniture, and baskets. Anne is in a shop, having taken refuge from a sudden rainfall. Wentworth runs along the street and enters the shop. He shuts the door, unaware of who's behind him. He removes his sopping wet hat and turns to see her. He stares at her, absolutely stunned.
Miss Elliot.
They stand close, face to face, and seem stuck for words.
Your sister mentioned you're being in Bath?
Yes. I'm lodging with the Admiral in Queen Square. You've perhaps also heard that Louisa Musgrove is to marry James Belling.
I have. I was most astonished.
As was I.
He edges a little closer. They share an awkward moment, then Wentworth looks away.
Yet I'm sure in time they will grow more alike. Captain Benwick will gain high spirits and cheerfulness, and she will...
Relish for morbid poetry.
Just so.
They smile warmly at each other. Anne bites her lower lip.
With all my soul, I wish them happy. And yet... Miss Louisa is a very... good, amiable, sweet-tempered girl. Harville's sister was a very superior woman. And Benwick's attachment to her was indeed profound. A man cannot recover from such a passion. With such a woman. He ought not. He does not.
Mr. Elliot enters.
Dear Anne, I cannot say how grieved I am to have kept you waiting. The carriage is outside.
Oh, Miss Elliot, permit me to name Captain Wentworth. My cousin, Mr. Elliot.
The men stand proudly and bow to each other.
Captain, there is a concert at the Pump Rooms tonight. I remember how fond you are of music.
Elliot opens the shop door and lets Anne exit first. He shoots Wentworth an arrogant look for following her. Sir Walter promenades with Elizabeth through the elegant pump rooms. Anne and Mrs. Clay follow behind.
I must say, though, the worst of Bath is the number of plain women. I frequently observe that one pretty face would be followed by 35 frights. And as for the men... Oh! Ah, Lady Russell. You're at home tomorrow night to a somewhat select gathering.
We do, sir. Hope you're at liberty.
Of course, Sir Walter. With pleasure.
But where is Lady Dalrymple?
Good heavens. Is that Frederick Wentworth?
Isn't he the nobody?
What on earth is he doing in Bath?
Anne looks at Wentworth, who stands looking at her from a little way off. He bows, and she curtsies back. She walks over to him.
Is the programme to your liking?
I found myself at liberty this evening.
Bath has much to offer those who are interested in music.
So I am led to believe.
And shall you be staying long in Bath?
I don't know. That is to say, I am not certain. It all depends.
I see.
Miss Elliot.
Captain.
Lady Dalrymple.
Oh, Anne. Lady Dalrymple is here.
Elizabeth and Sir Walter rush forward. Wentworth is brushed aside as they sweep Anne away from him to greet Lady Dalrymple, who enters in the arm of Mr. Elliot. Sir Walter goes up to the middle-aged woman and offers his arm. They walk together. People file into the well-appointed concert room and take a seat. The bewigged conductor stands in front of the orchestra, facing the guests as they enter. Anne sits in the front row with Elliot. She glances around desperately, trying to catch sight of Wentworth. Elizabeth sits at the far end of their row of seats, eyeing Elliot and Anne sitting together. Wentworth sits with the Crofts, who are gossiping while watching Anne and Elliot keenly.
Certainly, if the rumours are to be believed.
Wentworth is stunned and seems about to explode. As the conductor and the orchestra ready themselves, Wentworth rises and walks out. Anne turns, then scurries out after him. She runs through the deserted hallway. Wentworth faces her.
Are you going?
Yes.
Is the first half at least not worth staying for?
No. There's nothing here worth me staying for. Good night.
Anne's stunned as he turns and walks away. Elliot has left the concert hall.
My dear Anne, is all well? We're also dreadfully concerned.
Yes. I felt suddenly a little faint. I'm quite recovered.
The tall, sharp-featured Elliot smiles down at her.
Should we not return to the concert?
Dearest Anne, I have been awaiting an opportunity to speak to you privately, and now it seems to have come.
Sorry, sir, I'm not very good company.
My dear cousin, you are far too modest for the world in general to be aware of even half your accomplishments.
Really, sir, I did not think you know me that well.
On the contrary.
He takes her hand.
The name of Anne Elliot has long had a beguiling charm for me. If I dared, I would now breathe my sincerest wish that that name might never change.
Sir,
I do not venture to expect an immediate answer to my proposal, but I cannot in honor further conceal intentions. And perhaps tomorrow night at Camden Place, you'll feel able to make me the happiest and most fortunate of men.
Anne is dumbstruck as he bends and kisses her hand. Anne comes down the grand staircase wearing a plain purple frock. She stops on noticing a letter on the silver tray. She runs down, picks it up, and hastily opens it.
Miss Elliot, I am charged with an urgent commitment from the Admiral in regard to your family. And since I am to leave Bath today without delay, I should be obliged if I could wait upon you at 11 this morning.
She turns to a grandfather clock behind her. It's just before 11. Startled, she turns towards the front door, then heads upstairs.
Hello, Anne, how are you?
Charles! Mary!
I am here to take the waters.
I have been most dreadfully unwell. It is my last hope.
Father! Elizabeth!
Good heavens, it's Mary.
To order, Elizabeth. We have come to choose a wedding dress with Mother and Henrietta. She is to be married to Charles Hayter.
Who?
A mere country curate, Father. Pray do not trouble yourself.
And dear Louisa, is she not with you?
She stayed at Uppercross with Captain Bennick.
Who?
The naval captain, Father. Pray do not trouble yourself.
I suppose we shall have to invite the Musgroves tonight as well.
A party?
I should be loath to introduce him to Lady Dalrymple.
Will Mr. Elliot be there? I must at all costs be introduced to Mr. Elliot.
Well, I had not the smallest intention of inviting him, but...
Wentworth!
Charles.
Hello, old fellow. How are you? I didn't expect to see you here. Where are you staying? We must go shooting one day, if you have time.
Mrs. Musgrove.
Captain. Father, this is Captain Wentworth. He is related to our tenants, the Crofts. Captain, this is my father, Sir Walter Elliot, Baronet. And my eldest sister, Elizabeth.
Thank you. We are acquainted.
Captain. Please.
Anne leads Wentworth into a reception room off the entrance hallway. The others glare.
Well,
I am charged. That is to say, the Admiral, Admiral Croft, has been confidently informed that Mr. Elliot, that everything is settled now in your family for a union between yourself and Mr. Elliot. It was added that you were to live at Kellynch. And my commission from the Admiral is to say that if the family's wish is such, his lease at Kellynch shall be cancelled and he and my sister will provide themselves with another home, that is all. What answer shall I give?
You'll please thank the Admiral on my behalf, but I must tell you that he is utterly misinformed.
Wentworth looks stunned.
Misinformed? Utterly?
Yes, Captain. Quite mistaken.
No truth in any part of it.
None. And I should be grateful to know the source of such fanciful rumours.
As to that.
Lady Russell is here.
Do you remember Lady Russell, Captain?
How could I forget?
Anne, I received your note.
Miss Elliot, if you'll excuse me, I shall convey your views to the Admiral. Good day.
Captain, is it true? Mr. Elliot has proposed.
If you'll excuse me, Lady Russell, I must speak with Captain Wentworth.
She rushes out. Anne pushes past Henrietta and Mrs. Musgrove and runs out through the door. She bounds around the corner and meets Harriet walking towards her.
Anne, I must speak with you. Dear Harriet, must it be now? Anne, I must ask, is it true Mr. Elliot has asked you to marry him?
Yes, but...
Anne, I hope I give no offence, but I can never forgive myself if I did not acquaint you with Mr. Elliot's real character. I only hope I'm not too late.
Good heavens, Harriet, what is it?
Mr. Elliot is a man without heart or conscience. A designing, cold-blooded being that thinks only of itself. His recent reconciliation with your father was no accident. He had heard a rumor in London that Sir Walter Elliot might be led to marry his daughter's companion.
Mrs. Clare?
The very same. And should she provide him with an heir, of course. The child would inherit everything instead of Mr. Elliot.
But he is already rich.
Of course. He married his poor wife for money and nothing else. But what he now desires above all is to be a baronet. He cannot bear the thought of not being Sir William.
Well, why then would he wish to marry me?
Oh, his admiration for you is sincere as far as it goes. Although it has not prevented him from courting Mrs. Clay at the same time.
No.
Indeed.
He has promised to establish her as his mistress in London as soon as he is married to you. There is nothing he would not do to prevent your father marrying again.
I am profoundly grateful to you, Harriet. But now, if you forgive me, I must go.
Anne leaves Harriet on the footpath and runs off past the lavish houses of Royal Crescent. Anne knocks on the front door of the Crofts Green Square house.
Captain Harville.
Miss Elliot. If you are come to call upon the Admiral and Mrs. Croft, I must disappoint you. They went to take the waters with Captain Wentworth. But since you are here, you may save me some time. Captain Wentworth bade me bring this note to you in Camden Place. Perhaps you would take it now.
Thank you.
You're quite well, Miss Elliot.
Thank you.
And if you'll excuse me, I'm already late for an appointment.
Harville walks off. Anne fumbles as she hastily opens the letter.
Bear this no longer. You pierce my soul. I'm half agony, half hope. Unjust I may have been. Weak and resentful I have been, but never inconstant. I offer myself to you again with a heart even more your own than when you almost broke it 8 years ago. I have loved none but you. You alone have brought me to Bath. For you alone I think and plan. Have you not seen this?
Anne runs through the streets.
I must go, uncertain of my fate. A word, a look will be enough. Only tell me that I am... Tell me not that I am too late, that such precious feelings are gone forever.
She finds Admiral and Mrs. Croft.
Miss Elliot. You've just missed Frederick.
He has just gone to call upon you at Camden Place.
Anne quickly turns and runs off back down the street. With letter in one hand and raised skirt in the other, she runs past people going about their daily errands at the market stalls. She races over the grey cobblestones that are strewn with scatterings of straw. Anne bounds past ornate stone balustrades. She bumps into Charles, who stands chatting to Wentworth on Royal Crescent.
Anne! Charles!
Anne, good heavens, is anything the matter? Anne!
Thank you, Charles. I'm quite well.
You look quite done for. We shall have to get you home directly. The thing of it is, I ought to be in the marketplace now. A fellow there promised me the sight of a capital gun he's just sending off. Said he'd keep it unpacked to the last possible minute. If I do not cut along now, I shall miss out. You know, from his description, Wentworth, it sounds a good deal like that 16-bore Mortimer of mine you shot with that day round Winthrop, do you remember?
Anne and Wentworth stand staring at each other and seem oblivious to Charles's rantings. They don't even notice him walking off. Wentworth doffs his hat and steps in close to her.
Captain, I am in receipt of your proposal, and am minded to accept it. Thank you.
Are you quite certain?
I am. I am determined. I will. And nothing, you may be sure, will ever persuade me otherwise.
Wentworth looks down at her with a content smile. A tear falls down Anne's cheek as she very tentatively raises her head up to his. Anne's jaw quivers nervously as Wentworth and her lips edge closer and closer towards each other. They eventually meet, and the couple hold a long, passionate kiss. Anne, wearing a pretty green dress, sits at her desk writing her diary. She stops and looks up. She smiles contentedly. An open carriage drives through a pillared gateway and onto the front entrance of a grand house. Wentworth and Anne are in the back. The footman driver jumps down and opens the carriage door for them. Wentworth steps down and holds out his hand for Anne, who is blindfolded. She takes his hand and tentatively takes the steps down to ground level. He holds his arm around her waist and guides her onto the front lawn, which looks onto the front facade of the house. The impressive three-story grey stone building has several latticed windows overlooking the grounds. Wentworth stops Anne and removes the black scarf bound around her eyes.
I'd like to see your wedding present.
It's Kalinch. He watches Anne adoringly as she staggers in a complete state of shock towards her home. She then runs into his arms and he twirls her around. They kiss, she caressing his neck, he holding her in his arms. They continue kissing passionately, then slowly break off and begin to waltz arm in arm over the lawn. ITFC audio description by Fiona McGeown.